Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on the Progressive Radio Network on Monday, March 3rd, 2014. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on Prescriptions for Health on the Progressive Radio Network on the first and third Monday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time and from 7 to 8 a.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are available 24/7 on prn.fm and drsaputo.com.
Today, you'll hear Nurse Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after and 20 to the hour. And we've got another great show for you today that's going to include, how is shamanistic healing superior to mainstream medicine?
And the drug doctors prescribe most for pain is now linked to ADHD.
God, when is it going to quit? All these drugs and their complications. And newly appreciated side effects of antidepressants that are worse than your wildest imagination.
The number of commonly used drugs that are incompatible with statins will blow your mind.
Indeed. And what pesticide is now unavoidable in the air that we breathe, the water we drink, and the soil?
What is shamanic healing? Does it sound a little woo-woo to you? You know, we often hear the expression that the whole person is body, mind, emotion, and spirit. So how does the connection of the physical and the spirit world find healing? And do science and spirit align? Now, shamanism is a pretty ancient mode of spiritual healing, and it's present in all cultures all over the world. And shamans believe that they are the vessel for the spirits to heal our souls.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that, and it goes back to looking at science and spirituality. And a lot of the time we look at those as opposites, but they're really not. They're on the same spectrum, Vicki. The same spectrum. Shamanism is on one side with the part that has to do with spirit, and science is on the other side. And they are always, 100% of the time, congruent. The problem is you need to understand how they meet. Because reality is what it is, and it is a perspective of both science and spirituality. So we should pay attention to that. Then we go back to the history of the shamans, and they're more interested in healing people. And we look at Western medicine, and it's more interested in curing symptoms. Rarely do we look at the cause for disease in Western medicine. And yet that's what the shaman's looking for.
Well, so maybe we need to define what healing is, because I think when we talk about the shamans, we're talking about healing the soul.
And the body and the mind and the whole thing. Body, mind, emotion, and spirit, the whole thing. That's about returning to wholeness, where there's a balance of body, mind, emotion, and spirit. That's healing. Curing is just eliminating symptoms. So you have an ulcer, you fix the ulcer with some drugs, or you do what you're going to do surgically, and the symptoms go away. But the cause for the ulcer hasn't been addressed, hasn't even been touched upon. Same thing with a headache. Take two aspirins or take Tylenol or do whatever you're going to do. You're treating symptoms, not treating the cause for what's gone wrong. So the shaman is more interested in helping you to understand why things have happened the way they have and what Mother Nature is doing to give us the opportunity to be able to resolve those issues. Because the body is a very accurate reflector of what's going on when there's dis-ease at the psycho-spiritual level.
You know, shamans can be psychics. They can be intuitives. They can be American Indian chiefs,
sure.
Animal communicators, sound healers, music therapy, Reiki practitioner, and mediums like John of God.
Sure.
And I know that they do focus on the spiritual aspect of physical illness. And if you have a meaningful purpose in life, how does that nourish your soul?
It's what does nourish your soul if you're aligned properly. I think that what we need to do is to have an appreciation that physical disease is the body's expression of psycho-spiritual dis-ease. I think that's an important enough statement that I want to say it again. Physical disease is the body's expression of psycho-spiritual dis-ease. And so the role of the healer, whoever that might be, would be to bring that back into alignment so that the body no longer needs to manifest those symptoms. I mean, think of people who have a lot of stress. They tighten up in their neck or their back, and it may just take a small repetitive stress episode to cause pain that starts, that goes on for a long time, and may lead to something like fibromyalgia. Or think of the person who has an ulcer. We give them some of the purple pills and some sedatives and sleeping pills or whatever, antidepressants, and their symptoms recover. But their cause of their ulcer doesn't.
And so that's, we need to pay attention to our life's lessons.
Absolutely. I think we're at a low era, the lowest era that I can think of from the point of view of healing. We're at the highest era that I'm aware of the high-tech approach to solving the symptoms that we have. I mean, look at the amazing things we can do in Western medicine. We can do stem cell therapies that we're starting to work on. We know what the human genome is like. We can do microsurgeries that are robotic. We can fix so many problems from the point of view of the symptoms that they have. But how many of those problems can we solve from the cause of what started all this to begin with? We're not taught that. We don't address it. We're really a technology and pharmaceutical industry, and doctors are extensions of that, and that's what we're taught.
Well, you know, too, just for a second, I wanted to go back to this meaningful purpose in life, because mm-hmm. I think if a person's inspired and they follow their heart and their true self, that it nourishes their soul.
No question. We all need to be having a life that has meaningful purpose. If we don't, what's the point of being here?
And, you know, so often we hear about meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that spirit, well, we're surrounded by our spirituality. And one place to find it is in nature, mm-hmm. and in our dreams, sure. in our visions, sure. our meditation. Mm-hmm. These things open the window to our soul.
Exactly.
If we're in nature and we notice the animals, I mean, animals have instincts.
Oh,
they
sure.
watch their back, you know. Look at what dogs can do. I mean, they can smell and follow people, or they can detect even cancer sometimes.
Mm-hmm. But sniffing dogs.
But they also right. teach us love, mm-hmm. and they help us to love ourselves. And then there are things in this spiritual realm, like drums and chanting. And talk for a minute about the Uwipi ceremony that you went to.
Well, keep in mind that what these are vehicles. They're tools that help us get in touch with spirit. So if there's chanting, or there's drumming, or there's some other way that we're connecting with spirit through music or art, or sometimes even through sport, that takes us into that moment where we're deeply immersed in the presence, in the present tense. And that helps us to make connection with that aspect of us that's spiritual.
Well, I think spirituality is also found in things like forgiveness and respect and being patient.
Yeah, well, those are all qualities that emerge from paying attention to your spiritual essence.
And then, of course, I was saying about being in nature, the earth, which is another one of the reasons why it's so important that we protect our earth.
Sure. Well, we talk about something called earthing, where we actually touch our bodies to the ground. We walk on the earth barefooted. It makes a big difference in terms of healing. And there's this thing called earthing that's a real treatment mm-hmm. for people who have pain or other kinds of problems. So it's important that we look at that, those aspects of.
Well, when you did the Uwipi ceremony, weren't you on the ground?
Oh, yes. I was part of the ground, I think. Well, what that is a Native American ceremony that the Lakota Indians do, and I had the privilege of being invited to this ceremony a few years ago. It must have been about 10 years ago now. And basically what it was is for the healing of a couple of children. And so it started out with a very hot episode where we're in this teepee that's full of heat that you stay in for.
It's hot rocks, right?
Hot rocks. And I've been in a few of these kinds of ceremonies before, and they're
like
taxing.
A sweat lodge. It's like
it is a sweat lodge. It's exactly what it is. I didn't want to just say that because people might not know what it is, but that's exactly what it is. And when you're in this sweat lodge, the temperatures are really hot, and they and the hot air rises to the top of the teepee. So most of us are in the mud on the bottom with our noses down there because it is so hot. And really the intent of that is to connect us with the earth in part. Because what it does when it's that hot is it drives you inside because the heat is so intense that you almost can't stand it. And I remember at this sweat lodge that I was in prior to the UWIPI ceremony itself, I thought I was going to have to bolt for the door after the first about 2 or 3 minutes of the ceremony because my eyes were hot, my nose was burning, my ears. I thought I was going
to
burst into
flames. It hurts to breathe.
Oh, you couldn't take a deep breath, and I was down as low as I could go in the mud. And then suddenly it was like a switch got turned, and I don't remember a whole lot of the heat for the next 2 hours. Because what happened is that heat served as a vehicle to drive me to be present and focused on why I was there, which was to pray for the healing of two kids, one who had pyloric stenosis and the other had a neutropenia, and they hadn't had any medical treatment. So in this ceremony that I participated in, I was right there, and for 2 hours, I would never have been able to stood it had I been just paying attention to the heat. But when my mind was turned and focused only on the healing of those two kids, it was different.
Well, didn't you also see lights and sparks? And
not there. That was later. So when that happened and the door finally opened, what happened is I again felt the intense heat because the trance was broken. And I wanted to bolt out again, but fortunately the heat dissipated quickly, and I was able to get out. Now, that was just a couple of hours from 9 to about 11 at night. Then, a couple of hours later, from about 1 to 3, we had the formal UWIPI ceremony, which was a big room, about 30 by 20 by 30, and it was filled with about 20 people. It was pitch black. You couldn't see a thing. The windows were all blackened, so there was no light whatsoever. And the medicine man was at his altar, with his hands tied behind his back with rawhide into something I don't think even a magician could get out of. But he did, because we could see when the ceremony was over that his hands were free. But during the ceremony itself, you could see the static electricity from the rattles up in the corners of the room. And you're going, how could they get there? It seems so far away. And the drummers were drumming and the singers were chanting we were watching this and experiencing what was going on for about 2 hours. And when it was over, I asked the Indian chief, I said, or the medicine man that was running the ceremony, I said, how did that all happen? He says, the spirits did that, not me. Everything happened through me. So we're looking at a kind of shamanistic, a clear shamanistic healing that was an amazing experience for me. And the proof of the pudding was 6 weeks later when both kids got well with no medical treatment of any kind.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Well, it tells you, you know, in a kind of a clear way that there's a spirit world out there that's huge. And we're not taught to think about that or appreciate it or even give any credibility to it. In fact, a lot of us call it woo-woo. Oh, you don't really believe that stuff, do you?
You know, in the past, I've interviewed people that were psychics and very spiritual type people, and they have told me stories about how they had spirit guides that they could actually see, and they're intuitive. Some of these intuitives can see physical illness inside your body. They have like the power to do that. But a lot of people that have these capabilities don't really tell everybody because people think they're nuts.
If you had it, you might not even know it.
Or they don't believe them.
I mean, think of what happens when you're born. The first thing that happens is you get into the world that we know of, the culture that we're taught. And it doesn't include the world of spiritism. It doesn't include the spirits. Or any of this kind of spiritual approach. And whenever these kinds of thinking come up, it's like it's not really reinforced. If we had a group of children, like the Indigo kids, for example, or not, and we raised them to appreciate these things that were happening, I think there would be a whole different kind of world out there. It would be more immersed in the things that we don't pay attention to, that we repress, that we don't appreciate, and we actually eliminate from our conscious awareness.
Well, usually we think of, when we think of most, many of us, when we think of spirit, we think of like the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit,
sure.
The Blessed Virgin Mary, our guardian angels, the saints. And then there's also like entities and mm-hmm. the spirit guides.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went to go visit John of God many years ago in Abajania in Brazil, these entities would come through him, and he didn't even know what he was doing because it was them working through him.
Yeah, he'd be unconscious, like if, basically, or in a deep trance.
Yeah, like if you interviewed him afterwards, he didn't remember any of it, mm-hmm. and he doesn't even know what he's doing, and he was doing like really weird, far out sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then, excuse me, what about like the firewalk? I mean, that shows the power of our thoughts.
That's really something.
And you have to meditate and really be present and go through all that to be able to
be
do
in
that.
A deep trance and focused.
If you didn't do that ahead of time, you would burn your feet off.
Well, think of it this way. You're walking barefooted on 2,000 degree coals. Now, that sounds to me...
More than that.
Maybe more, but that's hot enough.
Yeah.
Okay, that'll toast your cookies. And I remember back in 1986 when one of my patients came to me and said, I'm going on a firewalk. And I said, you mean barefooted? And he said, yeah, 2,000 degree coals. I said, you got to be nuts. I said, you'll be back in the ICU tomorrow. And he looked at me and he said, okay, Mr. Smart Guy, I'm going to give you a couple of free tickets. You come and watch. And Vicky and I did.
And we did more than watch. We ended up doing it.
Well, we couldn't not do it. We watched 300 people walk across a 12-foot strip 3 feet wide of red hot coals that you didn't want to get near as they dumped them out of the wheelbarrows to put in these paths. And when we saw all these people do this, for me, it was like, I have to do this because I know it's possible and my reality has shifted because I've seen it. And so I did. And when I got done with it, I couldn't believe in some ways that I didn't, but I was too afraid not to stay in the trance because I knew how hot those coals were.
Well, it was a pretty amazing experience. It shows you the power of the mind. But I want to talk about some more things that have to do with spirituality, like for healing
mm-hmm.
and for people that are physically ill, mm-hmm. you know, because there's the connection of the physical illness with the body, mind, emotion, and spirit. So what is somatic experiencing?
That's a very interesting way to look at dealing with the emotions that are buried in the muscle system of our body. When you look at the body as one thing and that it responds physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually every single moment, every single millisecond of our life, our muscles are part of that. And when our muscles go into muscle tension patterns because of our experiences, they stay there. And they're like a fingerprint. So we all have a fingerprint of muscle tension that's different than every other person on the planet. Now, when somebody who's experienced in that releases that muscle tension patterns, very often the memory of that experience will come into conscious awareness. And when it does, it gives you a second chance to be able to re-experience what happened. Maybe it's a decade or 30 or 50 years later. And when that happens, you will be in a different situation than when it occurred the first time, because the first time you were probably a kid and didn't have the tools to deal with it. But all these years later, you learn something, and most of those things that happen in childhood, we can deal with. Then we have a chance of putting that memory to rest and use those tools.
And so some of this memory that's stored in our bodies and in our muscles and so forth can be released with certain types of body work, like Rosen, for example.
Lots of different styles. Yes,
Rosen
that's
method.
Right.
And then also there's Qigong, which is like a moving healing meditation. And
there are a lot of styles of work that deal with the whole essence of who we are. And we look at one perspective of who we are, and that can influence the rest of how we behave in every way.
Well, I think that our conscience, our ethics, standing up for what's right, our intention, all those things are related to our spirituality. And we're all connected by spirit. And death is the final passing from the physical to the spiritual world. Although it's not just the physical world, because like we just said, it's the body, mind, emotion, spiritual world, but passing on to the fully spiritual world.
Yeah, very good stuff. All right, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputa here with Nurse Vicki. And it's time for Vicki's first 2020 tip on truths and rules to remember. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the drug MDs prescribe most for pain is now linked to ADHD.
I have a simple truth that I hope will not offend you. Lovers help each other undress before sex. However, after sex, they always dress on their own. The moral of the story? In life, no one helps you once you're screwed.
That's a surprise. That's true.
Well, whoops. Now, if you I have some rules to remember in life. If you help somebody when they're in trouble, they'll remember you when you're in trouble again.
Prepare for a second offering, huh?
Many people are alive only because it's illegal to shoot them.
That's true.
Alcohol doesn't solve any problems, but then neither does milk.
Many an alcoholic who said that.
So I have a bonus rule. Condoms do not guarantee safe sex because there was this guy down the street that was wearing one when he was shot by the woman's husband.
Oh, jeez.
Well, you know, laughter's the best medicine.
Indeed.
It's not new news that pregnant women shouldn't take medications, but it's often tempting to just take a Tylenol after all. It is advertised all over television to give it to our children with love.
Isn't that what the medicine doctors prescribe most in the hospital, according to the published literature?
Yeah, and all these ads that make it look like the mother's being such a good mom and being so loving and everything to her sick child to give the child Tylenol.
So
especially since babies can get Ray syndrome from aspirin.
So. Right, so after 50 years, what do we find out?
Well, Tylenol or acetaminophen can have a lot of dangerous side effects. And we have a lot of information on drsaputo.com. And now a new study shows that pregnant women who take it increase their risk for having a baby that'll develop ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Boy, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is just weird when you think about it. And we're weirder for believing all the stuff that comes from it.
Well, everybody because, seems to think it's safe.
Well, it's safe most of the time. I think you could say that about most drugs that are out there. But always, always, if you study it long enough, you'll find out some things that are very undesirable. And we call those side effects, but that's kind of a euphemism because they're not side effects. Those are the effects of the drug in some people.
They're adverse effects.
They're adverse effects of what happens. And who's going to study the adverse effects if you're making the pill yourself?
Well, this
you don't want to find the bad things about it. You want to publish the good things about it so you'll sell more.
Yeah, well, this study showed that 54% of the pregnant moms use it when, you know, they use it when they're pregnant.
Pregnancy, yeah. Well, it's because they think it's safe.
Well, Tylenol that's taken prenatally increases the risk of the ADHD by 35%.
Well, there's something to take a look at.
Sure. I'll say.
Well, it's something that you wouldn't really just think would happen. And usually when it takes 50 years to figure something out, it means you've missed the boat the whole time. And that's why I say you've got to go back and really be tough on the pharmaceutical industry, but not just them, on the people who think that's the way medicine should be practiced. Drugs are good. The drugs of the shaman, the herbs of the universe that are on this planet, are very effective at handling almost every problem that we have. I don't know who it was that said it, that there's an herb for every condition, but I think it's right. The problem is we try to make money from all this, and so you can't patent something that's a natural substance, so you can't patent an herb, but you can patent something that's extracted from an herb and concentrated, and that's what we do for a lot of the medications that we have. So we wind up with a lot of people who are having problems. No surprise.
Well, you know, some people say you can't really pay attention to animal studies, but they did do a study on this on rats, on pregnant rats, mm-hmm. and it disrupted their hormones. So that could
be a hormone disruptor, which means it makes estrogen levels go way up, and that could cause a problem for sure. And it's not just this. I mean, look at some of the other problems with Tylenol that we know of. It can kill you if you take an overdose of it because of its effect on the liver. And if you overwhelm the detoxification system, it destroys the liver.
And you can hemorrhage.
You can hemorrhage from it, much like aspirin. You also can lose your hearing from it. You can get the Stevens-Johnson syndrome, which
causes where your skin falls off.
It's terrible. And you could have a lot of blood changes that occur with your white count and your red count and your platelet count. You can get hives. There are lots of problems.
Well, you know, the other thing is that there are alternatives out there and that are safe. Things like acupuncture, physical therapy, chiropractic, the photon stimulator, and to decrease stress. Because you need to ask yourself, why are these women taking the Tylenol? There's a lot of them that are taking it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe they have a little backache from being pregnant, or they might have a headache or whatever it is. But there are other things that can help that.
Well, who wants to suffer is what that boils down to. And Tylenol is thought of as so benign that it's not a big deal. It's much the same as something like Advil, you know?
It's like, oh, just take it and it'll take the edge off and it's not going to hurt anything. But boy, I'll tell you, if you have a child that has ADHD, you're going to sure as heck wish you hadn't done it.
I'll say that's for sure. Well, you look at some of the other drugs that have come off the market, like Darvon. We've mentioned that on several of the past previous shows. After 50 years, it was taken off the market. And it's telling you that if you can't find a drug after 50 years, that's safe. What's happening with a lot of the other drugs that are out there that we haven't tested for that period of time?
But Tylenol, you were saying 50 years. It's been over the counter since 1950.
Yeah, so that's 60 years.
Plus, it's in many other medications. You know, we've talked about this before, in cough syrups and cold medicines and so forth.
Right. You could have taken Darvocet, which is what? A combination of Darvon and acetaminophen. So these drugs, as common as they are to use and as much as we assume are safe, they're really not. And you shouldn't take anything if you're pregnant, because we don't really know. And when you have birth defects that come up as an issue with a lot of the drugs that are out there, it may not be one that you see with Tylenol that we know of yet.
Yeah, like remember the thalidomide babies.
Oh, that was huge. And there's so many other drugs, too.
The doctors were like, oh, this is harmless. You know, just take it for your nausea.
Well, look at the antidepressants, too, the SSRIs. They cause birth defects. It's something that you have to just pay attention to. And don't think that things like Advil are safe either. They cause about 30,000 deaths every year and maybe 300,000 admissions to hospitals. Talk about the pharmaceutical industry as being the way that we look to manage people's health symptoms. Yes, there's a place for it, but no, not as the first choice. We should be going with lifestyle medicine first, because it's the safest and the most effective.
Here are these little babies that are in utero, and they're being exposed to so many toxins before they even breathe air.
Well, that's right. And a lot of the things that happen to a baby happen while the mother's pregnant. Even the mother's emotions affect the child and what that child is going to be like when they come out, and whether the mother drinks or is on drugs or is using just simple things like Tylenol.
Or smoking.
This is a sacred time, and we can't be taking chances with our children of tomorrow. I mean, you don't want your baby to be born with something you could have avoided. I think the safest thing is, if you're not sure, don't.
If in doubt, don't, yeah.
Yeah, isn't that what you learned as a nurse?
Yep, that was a good rule.
Right, so this whole thing here is something that we need to review and start thinking out of the box a little bit. I mean, this study looked at 64,000 children and their mothers in the Danish National Birth Cohort between 1996 and 2002. And like Vicki said, 56% of the mothers reported using Tylenol or acetaminophen, and 37% were more likely to be diagnosed with something called hyperkinetic disorder, which is a really severe form of ADHD. 29% were more likely to be prescribed ADHD medications, and 13% more were likely to exhibit ADHD-like behaviors by age 7. Now, the authors of this study didn't think that was such a big deal. They said, well, we don't know that for sure, so we can't really tell you not to take Tylenol. My answer is, what the hell are they thinking?
So if a mother has a fever, what do you recommend?
You don't have to treat a fever. A fever is a good thing for a baby. Now, if it gets over 100...
No, for the mother. Oh, the pregnant mother. That's, they were saying that they thought that a lot of the women were taking the Tylenol.
I wouldn't do anything. I mean, why take anything? A fever is a good thing. It raises your metabolic rate. It helps you fight the illness better. It's the way you want to go.
Just drink a lot of water.
All right, it's time for a network station break. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. And we'll be right back with more Prescriptions for Health Radio, and we'll be talking about the newly found side effects of antidepressants that are worse than your wildest imagination. Welcome back to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuter here with Nurse Vicki.
Does it really make any sense to take an antidepressant when over 50% of patients end up with suicidal thoughts and sexual difficulties and emotional numbness from taking them?
It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, does it?
A research shows now how widespread this has become, especially in the 18 to the 25-year age group. And it turns out that psychiatrists have become psychopharmacologists because of what is taught in their training due to the influence of the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, somebody should be ashamed of themselves because this is just the wrong way to go. People need to be listened to and cared about. And if you do that, they have a chance to look at some of the problems that they're facing that lead to all these symptoms that make them dysfunctional.
Well, isn't it also one of the requirements of the health insurance company that they want to encourage the psychiatrist to just give the patient medications rather than to pay for their time?
That's what's happening. You get paid proportionally a lot more for a 15-minute visit than you do for a visit that's twice as long. But it's the same way in every medical field. So the whole insurance industry is pushing towards shorter visits so that there'll be less overall spent, and this is the way they do it.
But do insurance companies pay for psychologists?
Yeah, a lot of them do. They do. So they don't pay as much.
Yeah, well, they're less expensive than a psychiatrist because
exactly.
A psychiatrist is an MD.
Exactly.
So when we're talking about antidepressants, some of the ones that we're talking about are things like Paxil and Celexa and Lexapro, Zoloft, Prozac.
Yeah, right, that whole group. That's right.
And what are some of the other side effects?
Well, let's look, first of all, and ask the question, do they even work? I mean, are they any better than placebo?
Yeah, well, we talked about that study, and they're not.
They're not. No, there was a meta-analysis of something like 80 studies, and it showed that they were as effective as a placebo, and that's all. So what we're talking about is basically taking a placebo with dangerous side effects.
Yeah.
Why would we want to do that? Even exercise alone is superior to over the long haul than using drugs.
Well, you know, it's just so weird because, well, you know, I don't know. I was talking to our granddaughter the other day about it, and I was telling her about this study because she's studying psychology in college. And she says, well, how do we know that it's not just the symptoms of the depression and not from the drugs?
Well, you can compare the two. If you take a group that's on the drugs, that's of the same group that you start with, divide them in two. One group you give antidepressants to, and the other group you don't. And then you see what the difference in outcome is. And that's how you find things
like
this.
So the ones that are on the antidepressants are more suicidal. They have more emotional numbness and sexual difficulties. And then some of the other side effects, like they get agitated, they have insomnia, they have a dry mouth. It seems like that would make them want to think that they should go take another one.
Well, you know, it gets confusing to the patient, and it gets confusing to the doctors as well. Because we get trained by who? A lot of the time.
Pharmaceutical companies.
Sure. And what are they going to do? They're going to tell you, look, doctor, it works. I mean, you look at a drug like Abilify, it makes me want to almost throw up. Anybody who wants to take that drug better have darn good indications for it.
Why?
The side effects are just terrible. So you wouldn't want to take that risk. And then you look at what they're doing here, and I mean, it's a real issue. I mean,
well, I know somebody that was telling me about her nephew that had to take it. And that he's put on so much weight that he's become obese. And
well,
he was really
happens.
Just kind of a gangly kid before he started taking
it. They have a higher risk for type 2 diabetes. There's some evidence to show that they might cause osteoporosis. They may cause bleeding in older people and actually cause more strokes. There's a competition for detoxification of the SSRI and many other antidepressants.
And you were talking earlier about birth defects, too.
Well, sure. Oh, that's another problem, sure. And so here we are. It even neutralizes the effects of tamoxifen. I mean, hello. I mean, these drugs do so many things. It reminds me of the story of a drug called Minipress that was used for hypertension that's now used for what? To grow hair on people's heads.
So is that what is Rogaine?
It? Yeah, it's like that. So that tells you that we don't know much about what we're doing when you look at the details of what it does to cellular biochemistry. And it often takes 50 years to figure it out because nobody's really looking for the side effects.
The study also revealed that doctors aren't telling their patients about the side effects.
Well, yeah, they don't want to give them a nocebo effect, which is the opposite of a positive placebo effect, so they withhold the information. But logic would tell you, why don't they prescribe a placebo? There you get the same effect according to the biggest study ever done.
Because if they find out that you gave them a placebo, they're going to be mad.
Well, I mean, you got to know how to do things like that. And look at the effect of exercise. I mean, we know that that works better than antidepressants. The studies that came out of Duke about 15 years ago show that clearly.
And if you have friends, talking to your friends even.
Well, there are a lot of things that work better than a drug. And keep in mind that drugs never deal with the underlying reason for why someone's depressed. You've got
a lot of people say,
though,
you know, like what we were saying at the beginning, that they can't afford to see a psychiatrist, and their insurance won't, you know, let them have more than 15 minutes.
Well, and what's a psychiatrist going to do anyway these days? It's prescribe another drug, because that's what they do. There's two things that need to be done for people who have problems. One is they must be listened to. They need to know that you're listening and that you're paying attention to what they're saying. And if we wait long enough and listen to their story, they'll tell us what's wrong with them.
What would be great is if all these people that are depressed could have a healing circle.
Well, that's right. Of course, that's what we do in our practice.
Health Medicine Center.
Yeah. And the second thing they need, besides being listened to, is to be cared about. They need to know that you really care. And you're participating in whatever you can to support their return to wholeness, to wellness. Those are big things
just
to do.
Just to take time with the person instead of moving them in and moving them out just like Rawhide.
Well, HMO medicine doesn't allow that because it's about money. And doctors have become employees. And they do what they're expected to do or they're fired. So you have to go along with those policies.
Well, this whole thing with the side effects of these drugs, to me, just sounds absolutely crazy because the side effects are probably worse than how they felt when they started taking them.
Well, when you've done the studies and it shows that they're about the same as placebo, why in the world would you prescribe a drug? I don't care what your consideration is from the point of view of what the patient will think if they know they're getting a placebo or not. But we've talked about the studies where you tell people that they're taking placebo and they still get better.
Okay, so when would an antidepressant be used?
Well, in somebody maybe who can't be managed any other way.
What if somebody's bipolar?
There's a good example.
Or schizophrenic.
So those are the severe diseases where the antipsychotics do wonderful things to keep people more normal.
What about obsessive compulsive disorder?
It can be a little, some of the drugs can help that in the experience that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, I mean, that's more like a disease that causes lots of changes that's primary, that's not so much related to what you've learned as a child or the lifestyle. It's more genetic.
Mm-hmm.
And these anxiety and depression are learned things. It's not like you have a Prozac deficiency in your body. You don't need to replace that. You need to listen and care and be there to support the person and to work through the problems and find out what it was that happened in their life that led them to feel hopeless so that they can't cope and then they can't sleep and they can't function and they can't work and all these things. And for some of those people, a placebo that's supposed to be an antidepressant would be a wonderful thing to do. And I've done that in a number of patients and they respond very well. Placebo is a powerful medicine that's the right thing to do for a lot of people.
Which might be one of the reasons why the antidepressants do work for some of the people, because the doctor tells them it's an antidepressant and it's going to help their depression.
Well, that's exactly right. That's why it's called a placebo. And that's what these drugs are. For the most part, they're placebos with dangerous side effects. Terrible thing to say, but true. All right, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. It's time for Nurse Vicki's final 2020 tip on how to keep food fresh longer. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the number of commonly used drugs that are incompatible with statins. This is going to blow your mind. There's a lot of those. You wonder why you could even use them safely. And lastly, what pesticide is now unavoidable because it's in our food, water, and air?
nothing's more wasteful than food that hasn't been eaten and allowed to go bad. And it's not only a waste of money, but it's a waste of good food that in other parts of the world would be worth more than gold. Who did you hear that from?
My mother.
Yeah, me too. So as not to throw away good money after good food, I have some great tips to help you keep your food fresh and tasty that much longer. Now, when you get a batch of bananas, if you carefully wrap the crown of the batch with cling film to block the air, and it'll extend their shelf life for three to five days more.
Really?
And the other thing that I found is that they won't go brown so fast if you don't hang them on those cute little racks that you can buy.
Is that so? Okay.
Yeah, if you don't hang them up like that. Okay. And if you store onions in tights.
In tights?
You better use tights you're not going to wear. It says here that they'll last up to 8 months longer. That's a long time for an onion to last. I don't know if I want to eat it after 8 months. But anyway, I guess it'll make them last longer. Apply a little butter to the cut side of the cheese wedge to make sure it doesn't dry out.
Oh, interesting.
And when you store potatoes, put a few apples in with them, and it'll stop them from sprouting.
You're kidding.
And as I've read that a few other times. As for mushrooms, you should store those in a paper bag, not a plastic one, to keep them fresh.
Yeah, I know that.
If you keep milk in the refrigerator door, it'll go bad sooner than if you put it in the middle of the refrigerator. And also, this is something that I've been doing, and I shared it once before, but it's worth sharing again. If you rinse strawberries, berries, blueberries, any raspberries, any of those, in a mixture of one part vinegar and 10 parts water, and then you just drain and rinse and put them in the fridge, they'll last 2 weeks longer.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, so you want to make sure you keep that mixture diluted so you don't waste the vinegar.
Well, I think it retards all the yeast from growing. What it does.
I guess, yeah, but it does work. Mm-hmm. Store the eggs in the middle shelf of the refrigerator to make them last 3 to 4 weeks longer than their date of expiration.
Oh, interesting.
It's interesting because the refrigerators always have the egg thing in the door.
That's right.
To revive old bread, rub an ice cube on it and then bake it for 12 minutes.
Really?
And tomatoes, they last longer when they're stored at room temperature rather than in the refrigerator.
Huh.
And cheese should be kept in the warmest part of the refrigerator, like a vegetable or the cheese drawer. And keep older foods in the front of the refrigerator, obviously, so you don't miss out on their expiration date. The other thing I do is when I buy things like, for example, if I go to the health food store and I buy foods like from the deli there or something, or soups or something, I put the date on it.
That helps a lot.
And I also put what's in it, so we know what's in there.
Right. Good tips, Vicki.
Yeah. Okay, so is your cholesterol a problem? Are you on a statin drug like Zocor, Crestor, Mevacor, Lipitor, or Lescol?
Right.
Just to name a few. To lower it? And does your doctor want you to take a statin? And are you hesitant? Did your doctor give you lifestyle options to treat your cholesterol? And are statins worth the risk of potential side effects? Now, we're going to talk about some of the risks of taking one of the highest-selling drugs in the world, statins, especially if you take them with other medications.
Yeah, there's something. You have to know about the metabolism, okay, of a drug, how it's activated and how it's deactivated. And if the deactivation part of or the detoxification of the drug is limited because of what the liver can do and the load that's put to the liver, then it's going to take longer and drug levels are going to be higher. So if you take more drugs that use the same detoxification system, which turns out to be a real problem with the statins, that's what happens.
I know. There's so many drugs that you could take, like ulcer drugs and blood pressure drugs and antifungal and gout and digestive drugs and antibiotics and HIV, Dilantin, Coumadin, Niacin, to name a few.
You can hardly give somebody a statin who isn't on one of those drugs.
And it makes you wonder if a person that's taking a statin has side effects from the statin drug and they go to the doctor and they say, oh, you know, I'm having memory problems, or I have a headache, or I'm tired, or I have insomnia, or whatever it is. And then the doctor, or they say they have muscle pain, and the doctor gives them another prescription.
Yeah, a little Tylenol.
For the side effects.
Right.
But, you know, we need to talk about this muscle injury thing, because
serious. Let's go back to the way the doctor thinks. The doctor doesn't want to have to take the drug off and solve the problem over again with another system. because it's going to be stretching them a lot of the time. And so they tend to poo-poo the complaints. In fact, a few years ago, maybe about a decade ago, we reported on a study where they looked at who reported the side effects for statin drugs to the FDA or to the group that takes those complaints. And it wasn't the doctors. It was the patients.
Uh-huh.
So they have an agenda that's different than what the patient does. The doctor wants to treat and have it over with and stay on it until things change. And the patient wants to be attended to for every symptom that they have. And it's very difficult when you look at all the side effects that are posted in the physician's desk reference, which has a couple of thousand pages with a little tiny print, and almost all that attention is spent on side effects, what they call side effects. They're not really side effects at all. They're actual drug effects that are negative to what we would hope to have. It's a big job, and we don't focus on the side effects. We focus on the effects because we're trying to solve a problem and don't want to be bothered with the side effects unless they're really popular and major. But in the case of the statins, very often this muscle pain or fatigue is overlooked.
Well, I think we need to talk about this risk of the rhabdomyolysis because according to this study,
inflammation that lyses the muscle, releases a pigment into the bloodstream that can plug up your kidneys and cause death from renal failure.
And according to this study, there are genes that can predict this.
Yes, there are genes for detoxification. And we all have different abilities to detoxify depending on what our genetic capacity is. So what these people in this study were doing that was published in the journal called Circulation in July of 2013 was to say that they should study people better to find out what their genetic makeup is and see how well they detoxify. Well, I mean, you can do that, and it's a lot more money, but here, look how complicated we're getting. Now the cost of taking a drug like a statin is huge, and then you look at that list Vicky just told you about of the myriad of drugs, hundreds of drugs, that compete for that particular detoxification pathway. And you know you're going to have problems. It's just you almost can't not have a problem.
Okay, if somebody's listening to this and they're hearing how you can have all these side effects like liver failure and kidney failure, and you can have peripheral neuropathy. You can have a side effect of diabetes even.
Oh, it's common.
And memory problems and headaches and GI symptoms and fatigue, insomnia, rash, and so forth.
Yeah, it goes on and on and on and on.
So, would a person have a problem stopping cold turkey?
I wouldn't tell anybody to do anything about their statin because we're not treating them. This show is not meant to provide treatment for anybody. Its intention is to educate you. And you would not want to stop a statin abruptly. I think it would be a good idea to make sure you discuss it with your doctor, particularly if in the recent past you had a heart attack or a stroke, because we know that the incidence of complications from those conditions goes way up during the first few weeks after they occur. But for most people, it's not a huge issue. And for my people who come to see me for the first time, very often I'll take them off their statin because there's so many better ways of managing cholesterol than to use a drug that has all these side effects.
Like lifestyle, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Now, so what would you recommend with lifestyle for a diet? Let's start with diet.
Well, first of all, you want to eat the healthy fats. You know, you want to stay away from trans fats because they're inflammatory.
What about saturated fats? We're always hearing about saturated fats.
Well, a certain amount is fine in coconut oil, for example, is a good one. And a monounsaturated fat like olive oil is a very good one. What's not a good idea are the...
Animal fats?
Well, a little bit of animal fat is a very good thing, but I wouldn't have the processed oils that are vegetable oils that are polyunsaturated because they tend to make cholesterol more dangerous.
All those refined oils, corn oil,
the cottonseed oil, all those kinds of oils, not a good idea.
What's in the... canola oil, that's another one. Canola oil, you don't want to be...
No, whenever it's processed like that, it tends to make cholesterol go up. And, of course, we're trying to prevent inflammation. Not an easy thing to do.
And so also it's good to eat a lot of fresh vegetables, especially, and mm-hmm. fresh fruits, and exercise and keep your weight down, reduce stress, get enough sleep, because all these things help us to reduce inflammation. And that's what is causing the high cholesterol in the first place.
Well, it's causing the ratio of the cholesterol to become abnormal so that there's too much LDL and not enough HDL. Okay.
Okie dokie. So GMOs are allowing our food to be sprayed with multiple herbicides and insecticides without killing our produce. But what's it doing to us? Now, this biopollution from the Roundup glyphosate fallout is producing uncontrollable and irreversible changes in our genes. And even if we try to eat organic, a government study shows that Roundup weed killer is found in 75% of our air and the rain, and then it ends up in our blood. And GM farming, genetically modified farming, has made exposure predominantly to Roundup herbicide glyphosate a part of our daily life.
Yeah, this is something that's
so really... even if we're trying to live a healthy lifestyle and we're trying to eat organic, we're still being contaminated with this stuff.
Well, there's no such thing as organic food anymore, because the atmosphere, the food, water, and air, and soil has all been contaminated with things like this. And when you look at actually 86% of the air samples had Roundup in it, and 77% of people of the rain samples they had showed that. And they also showed that there's an 18 times increase over the past 12 years in the amount that's out there. I mean, this exposure is cumulative, and it's also synergistic, which means that over time it builds up in your body and can cause problems.
So, what is wrong with us? All these other countries have banned it, and we still use it.
Well, it's about economics.
And then we voted down about even labeling that it was that they were in our food. We don't even want to know. It's like, let's just block it out and play dumb, and then we don't have to deal with it because we don't know.
Well, I mean, when the last election results came out, I actually couldn't believe that people would be so naive as to vote down that they wanted to know what was in their food. I mean, come on. It's like,
well, that shows you what money and advertising can do.
Oh, it makes me sick when I think of the doctors who got on and supported that GMO food was just fine.
It's for money, I guess, for money.
What else could, either that or stupidity. I have to think it's the money.
Well, you know, they're not regulated by the FDA. The FDA leaves it up to the companies, just like they do with drugs and like what they do with skincare products. And a while back, we reported about these horrific breast tumors in rats, plus the liver and kidney failure that were caused by the genetically engineered food.
Well, there's a huge study that's an experiment that's going on, and we're the ones who are the guinea pigs. I mean, it's just that simple. And we can't afford to do that, especially when it's done on a global basis.
And a lot of it's estrogenic carcinogens.
Well, it causes xenoestrogens to be formed.
And so when they're inhaled, it evades the detoxification.
Well, it
so it's stronger, I guess.
Well, it's more potent that way. I don't know that eventually it's going to be detoxified, but maybe a little bit late. So this is not a small issue. This is something we should be really paying a lot of attention to, because it's everywhere, and it's getting to a place where I'm not sure we can resolve it. I mean, look at the DDT problem we had back in the 70s. That stuff had a half-life of 40 or 50 years, or 30 years, whatever it was. It's still a problem today.
Even look at that body burden study that was done a few years ago by the Environmental Working Group.
Well, there are lots of things about that. You're right. All right. We want to remind you that we'll be back to talk about what's new in the news and health the first and third Mondays of every month on PRN.FM and drsaputo.com from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time and 7 to 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be available 24/7 on PRN.FM.
And if you enjoyed today's radio show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we talked about in video and free access to more than 2,500 audio and video files, you can click on Health Headlines on the drsaputo.com homepage. And remember, a healthy lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Talk to you next time.